Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 7th of May. Tomorrow, it's recall primary day in the state of Wisconsin, and we thought that we would devote our entire All Things Political to this historic event. We have two guests with us on Together. We don't do that often, but why not try it? We'll see how it works out. We have different perspectives and are supporting different people in this recall race, and we are very interested in hearing your thoughts. Our guests are Christian Schneider, Senior Fellow at the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute, and Ruth Conniff, Political Editor of the Progressive Magazine. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. You can post your comments also on our Facebook page, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We do hope to take, because it's the day before a big event in the state of Wisconsin, as many calls as possible. I will go to calls pretty early in the show, and we just ask that you keep your comments, you know, as succinct as you can so that we can get as many comments as we can. So that said, on we go. Christian, thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. And Ruth, thank you very much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you here. The Wisconsin, Journal Sentinel wrote an editorial on Saturday saying that it's unnecessary, it's expensive, it's ugly, and it's coming tomorrow. These recall elections, the headline said, are a waste of time and money. Are they? Christian, let's start with you.
I certainly think they are. I mean, the recall elections, as they were originally put into effect, weren't really meant to just yank somebody out of office in the middle of their term simply because of a policy dispute. They were generally for somebody who had done something really, really bad, committed some kind of crime or something, and they were never really expected to deal with governors either. So, there are governors and legislatures all over the country that are dealing with unions in different ways, and some doing things that are actually more stringent than what Governor Walker did. So it just seems odd that he would be the one in the entire country that is subject to a recall.
Ruth, are they a waste of time and money?
Certainly not. I mean, this last year and a half has been just historic. I mean, we've never seen this kind of public outpouring. I mean, clearly this is democracy in action. This is really the will of the people. It's a process that's written into our Wisconsin state law. But as far as the money goes, it's sort of ironic to hear Republicans complain about it because, of course, one of the things that the recall election has been is a huge cash boon for Governor Walker, who's raised more money than any state official in Wisconsin history on this thing, mostly from outside the state, two-thirds of it from outside the state, mostly from the folks who were bankrolling Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum, and really he's in that category with his $13 million raised over 3 months. He's at the level of a presidential candidate in terms of the amount of money he's raising outside the state. He's making this a national issue. And when he, quote-unquote, dropped the bomb, he really set off this incredible public backlash. So, I mean, I think what we're seeing in Wisconsin is a huge fight with major national significance between the forces of democracy and the forces of money trying to take over our whole system of government here. So I think it's very significant, and it's certainly not a waste of time.
Christian, does this have major national significance, and if so, what is it?
Well, it certainly does. If there are other governors and other legislatures looking to kind of curb their, get their budgets under control and curb the power of the unions in their state, it certainly sends a message to them, not to tussle with the unions if Walker were to lose. But Ruth mentions the amount of money being spent. Scott Walker actually has to raise that much money because of all the money that unions are going to be pouring into this race. I mean, some estimates say that it could be just tens of millions of dollars that unions nationwide are going to be running against Scott Walker. And the recall initially was actually put into place to try to lessen the influence of special interests. If somebody was too beholden to a special interest or was getting too much money from a special interest, then we could recall them from office. But the exact opposite has happened here. Now you have one special interest that can raise tens of millions of dollars and recall a governor. So it's actually doing the exact opposite of what it was initially intended to do.
Ruth, have we yet to see the Democratic money come pouring into the state?
No, yeah, of course. I mean, the entire field of Democratic candidates has raised one-sixth of the money that Walker has raised, right? So during that three-month period, he has raised more money than any governor has ever raised for an entire, you know, election cycle. So there's no comparison in terms of the money. I mean, I won't argue with Christian that there's going to be more spending on the Democratic side. We have not seen it. It's a very short timeline. I think it's inevitable that Walker will drastically outspend his opponent, whoever emerges from the primary tomorrow. But, you know, I mean, it's also the source of the funds. I mean, this is not... This is what Walker says in his fundraising appeals in his direct mail, which it turns out is what he spent $20 million on, mainly is sending out these direct mail packages outside of Wisconsin to tell conservatives, this is all about big labor bosses from outside the state trying to take over. I mean, this is preposterous, because if you were at the protest downtown in Madison, you saw all your neighbors. My kids were there with their public school teachers. There were snowplow drivers from La Crosse, nurses, cops, firefighters. I mean, this is, you know, a grassroots backlash against Walker from inside the state, and he is the one who's raising his funds from outside the state. So, you know, it is not the case that we're going to have a completely no money candidate running against Walker. There, I agree with Christian. However, the money is going to dwarf the Democrats on the Republican side. I mean, there's no way they could catch up.
It has been said that if the Democrats allow the election on June 5th to be mostly about collective bargaining and unions, Governor Walker will survive. What do you think of that, Christian?
I think that's absolutely the case. I mean, we saw a poll just last week, the Marquette University poll, that shows that about 49% to 45% of people in the state support what Governor Walker did with the collective bargaining and the unions. About 74% support increasing pension and health care benefit contributions from government employees. So they support what he did. Now his only goal is to try to get people to actually support you know, him personally. Now it's because of those numbers that, you know, once you know, somebody wins this primary tomorrow, you're not going to hear a whole lot about the collective bargaining issue, which is, of course, the whole reason that we're having this recall election. It's all going to be about, you know, Scott Walker cut schools, Scott Walker, you know, the John Doe investigation. The spokesperson for the Democratic Party actually told Mother Jones Magazine that, you know, the collective bargaining issue just isn't moving people, so they've got to move on to, you know, the fake war on women and all this kind of stuff. So,
Ruth, what are the issues? What are the Democrats concerned about?
I think that definitely collective bargaining is an issue, but it's true there are about 350,000 union members out of the 5.7 million people in our state, so it is not the only issue. You know, and I think that the backlash against that, when the budget repair bill was rammed through, there were a whole bunch of things that happened to cause outrage. You know, one of them was taking away people's right to come to the table and even bargain over wages and benefits. But, you know, it was also the fact that Walker didn't run on it, and that he launched it by surprise, that he called it dropping the bomb, that it felt like a really unfair attack on some, you know, regular middle-class folks, particularly teachers, who a lot of us know and love. But the cuts to schools is not some kind of dodge that Democrats are bringing up because it sounds like a good campaign issue. I mean, Walker made the biggest cut to K-12 education in Wisconsin history. He's made huge cut to our vocational and technical college system. And let's not forget, we rank last in the nation in jobs. So Walker came in, his main campaign promise was that he was going to create 250,000 new jobs. He has now presided over Wisconsin's drop to dead last in the nation, and the March jobs numbers were even worse. We were the only state to lose a significant number of jobs in the nation. So that's huge for people, and that's not just, you know, making stuff up to run on.
What do you say to those other areas, Christian?
Well, you know, you're going to hear a lot about, you know, Scott Walker cut $800 million to schools, which of course isn't true, because he reduced aid to state schools by about that much, or local school districts. But then it's because of the increased health and pension contributions that's all made up. So, you know, it's interesting that people would say that he cut that much and then forget the entire reason that they were up protesting up in Madison all last year. So, but as far as, you know, you're just not going to hear a whole lot about those issues. As far as jobs, you know, it's funny that suddenly jobs become an issue by which a governor can be recalled. I mean, I don't recall anybody on the left saying Jim Doyle should be recalled when we lost 150,000 jobs under his watch, or, Tom Barrett, the unemployment rate in Milwaukee right now is about 10.4%, whereas it's about 6.8% in the rest of the state. So nobody's saying Tom Barrett should be recalled as mayor of Milwaukee because his jobs record is so abysmal there. So, this is all just kind of a dodge because of the collective bargaining issue just isn't moving people like they thought it would.
Mm-hmm. So you think that it was the collective bargaining issue that rallied people that prompted a recall?
Oh, I absolutely think so. I mean, governors do unpopular things all the time, but it was just suddenly this one thing where, you know, he gave people the choice of whether they wanted to be in a union or not, and it threatened the whole funding mechanism for unions, saying that the state government wasn't on the hook for collecting union dues for them anymore. So they wouldn't presumably have the political clout that they did in the past. And for a lot of the unions, that was just a bridge too far. And, that's why we're sitting here today.
The Democratic candidates have brought up the issue. Let's start with you on this, Ruth, of the John Doe probe and the governor setting up a legal defense fund. I know that that's going to come up in debates, whoever the Democratic winner is tomorrow. Is that a major issue, the legal defense fund? Will the governor need to talk more about why that was set up?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, you are not allowed under state law to set up such a fund unless you are actually a target of criminal investigation for either campaign finance or election law violations. And so, the governor so far has not been willing to say which kind of violation he's a target of investigation for, or, what crimes he's being investigated for, or who's paying his legal bills. But, if you look into just the whole history of the John Doe and all of his aides and associates who have been indicted, it's such a sleazy operation. And I think people who live in Milwaukee know this more intimately than people who live in the rest of the state. But just for starters, the $60,000 that Walker has declared moving to his criminal defense fund is coincidentally the same sum that his aides Brian Pierick and Tim Russell stole from Milwaukee area veterans and their widows and orphans. And that's part of this John Doe probe. I mean, it's really, I think it's very significant that he won't say a lot about it. And I think, the people who are very close to him are being indicted. So that's no small thing.
Christian, I heard you say that's not true. What's not true?
Yeah, under state law, you can set up a legal defense fund if you or if one of your subordinates are under investigation. So, his campaign has said that he set it up in accordance with the Government Accountability Board and that he's not the subject of any type of investigation. I mean,
he has refused to say more about knowing about that.
Well, because it's a John Doe investigation.
You're
not supposed to say anything about it. I mean, I know we have people leaking information out of the John Doe investigation, but legally you're not supposed to talk about what about what's going on in the John Doe. That's why it's a John Doe investigation. So, he's been found guilty of nothing. It was actually his office that authorized the John Doe investigation because he had heard this stuff about Tim Russell. So, Democrats are banking
a lot
on him.
He knew so well, and he was so close to him for so long. It's not credible that he didn't know what was going on. And I think that is what is going to be most harmful to him.
Well, he heard what was going on, and that's why he had the DA launch the investigation.
Do both of you see this as an issue that is of deep concern, moderate concern, no concern to Wisconsin voters? Christian?
I'm sorry, what was the question again?
The John Doe probe, the legal defense fund, is this of deep concern, moderate concern, no concern to Wisconsin voters?
Well, the polls show that it's actually of moderate concern, but, I think in the next month, Walker's going to have the chance to talk about it and kind of ameliorate any fears that people have about it.
Ruth?
I think it's of a great deal of concern to the extent that people know about it, and I think that if, in fact, the campaigns get on the air with the ads that they've already cut to explain it to people, if it's in the news more, the more people hear about it, the more outraged they are by it, because it's not that hard to understand. This is not a complicated thing. When Walker's chief of staff talked to Tim Russell about the violations that he had committed, it was a year before they called in any kind of investigation of that. So, I mean, there's a lot there that is really sleazy and really worrying. People don't like it when you take money from the widows and orphans of Iraq war vets. It's really something. So I think people don't know about it around the state, but when they hear about it, yeah, they're very concerned.
We go to phone calls. Our lines are filled. I'm just asking that you keep your comments as succinct as possible so we can take many, many phone calls, which is one of the purposes of this hour. All things political, because of the nature of what's happening in Wisconsin this week and for the next 5 weeks, we are concentrating on the recall primary this hour of the program. We have two guests with us. Ruth Conniff is political editor of the Progressive magazine. Christian Schneider is senior fellow at the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Our email, talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. To you in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just a reminder that tomorrow the Ideas Network stations will be covering the recall primary at 8 o'clock. You can hear results and analysis from WPR's Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Television's Frederica Freiberg, and political scientist Charles Franklin. That's tomorrow at 8 o'clock here on the Ideas Network. Off we go to your phone calls. There are many of them. We start with John in Hudson. Hi, John.
Oh, is that me?
That's you, John.
Oh, okay. I just think that, the governor can cut what he wants. He can, cut $2 billion in taxes for corporate welfare and then raise taxes on the poor by eliminating the homestead property tax. But when it comes down to it, when there is something that is so egregious, if we had the right, like those individuals in Ohio did, where we could do a citizen's veto, then there would be no need for a recall. However, when we do not have that right, when the only way that we can get our legislators to listen to us is by a recall, I think that that is what this really is about. And could you comment on a citizen's recall of legislation like Act 10?
All right, let's start with you, Christian.
Well, actually, back in 1913, when they first tried to institute the recall, they had things like referendum and other types of stuff that on the ballot, and they were all voted down. The recall came back in 1926 and passed narrowly. There are legislators and governors all over the United States that are working on union legislation, and most of them are Democrats. I mean, you have in New York and Illinois and Rhode Island, and yet none of them are being subject to a recall. So I think it's just something special here in Wisconsin that's going on, and that's why Governor Walker's under the threat of recall right now.
Is it special, Ruth?
Yeah, it's part of the whole progressive era set of reforms. And that 1913 legislature, as Christian mentioned, passed a whole bunch of powerful democratic reforms of our state government. So it's part of our democratic tradition, and it was meant to do exactly what's being used to do here, which is to try to wrest power back from corporate interests, which Bob Lafaillette used to inveigh against, seizing control of our government and giving citizens more power in their own democracy. So, yeah, I think it's a great thing to witness.
Mona in Watertown. Hi, Mona.
Hi. I have a comment about Christian had made a statement, or one of his first opening statements, that said that the recall was set up for when a legislature does something egregious, as opposed to making a policy decision. About 15 or so years ago, under the Tommy Thompson administration, there was a vote put out as to whether or not we should build Miller Park. There was a Democrat who had cast the deciding vote. I believe he was from Pleasant Prairie. He was recalled, and the Republicans absolutely attacked him for putting that ad or for making that vote. As it turned out, of course, it helped his district through the traffic going to Miller Park. What's the difference of what happened with a Miller Park vote and the collective bargaining?
Yeah, I believe it was George Petak, who was a Republican, who was recalled on that.
Right. It was George Petak. He was a Republican, and his constituents essentially said that he had lied to them because he had said he wouldn't support it, and then kind of in a last minute late night vote he voted for it, and so he was recalled by his constituents there.
Mm-hmm. And I guess
of course Scott Walker himself came into office as county executive in Milwaukee in a recall election.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, and that was because there was essentially a criminal operation going on there with people voting themselves their own benefits. So,
well,
and of course,
here
there was actually no recall done there. Tom Amen retired, or you know, resigned before recall actually took place, even though he was under the threat of one. So,
go ahead, Ruth. You can finish what you were saying.
Well, here we are again. I mean, there is that the same issue, but also when Walker came out denouncing recalls, there was a YouTube video that went viral, which was his own television ad at the time, talking about the power of citizens in a recall election and how great it was that he could run as a candidate in a recall, and that this is how citizens, you know, have the ability to put somebody else in office. So it was just. Yeah, it was an awesome response to his attack on the whole recall process.
Thank you, Mona, for the call. Jim in Milwaukee, hi.
Yeah, hi. Yesterday at church, we heard a reading from John 1 John 4:7-21, and it just talks about, and the pastor talked about hatred and fear would be manifest in the election process. And in the gospel it said, those who say I love God and hate their brothers and sisters are liars. For those who do not love a brother or sister for whom they have seen cannot love a God whom they have not seen. The commandment we have from him is this, that those who love God must love their brothers and sisters also. And when we see that hatred for the poor and the middle class and people that are not like the rich manifest in their Republican behaviors, it may not be the fact that that all people are acting in the way that Walker is, but they're certainly sitting back and enabling it by not resisting it.
Thank you, Jim, for the homily. Christian?
I'm not exactly what the Lord's position on this recall would be, but because of Walker's reforms, because of, you know, allowing state and local government employees to pay more for their pension and health care benefits, he was able to increase funding for Medicaid by about $1.2 billion in this last budget. So, you know, as much as we like to portray Scott Walker as some, you know, kind of evil vampire, you know, sucking services away from the poor, he was actually, because of those reforms, be able to do more for the people that need it the most.
Ruth?
I just think that's so preposterous, because here we are on the brink of seeing so many people, low-income people in Wisconsin, lose their health care because of the Badger care cuts. And it was really only the Obama administration stepping in that prevented it from being even worse. I mean, Walker wanted to cut 29,000 Wisconsin children off of Badger care, and the feds said no. But he is going to cut a lot of people off starting July 1st. They're going to be paying a lot more in premiums. Some of them will be totally ineligible. Their services are cut back. I mean, there's no doubt that Walker is not out there helping the poor.
What about this whole, I don't know how you take this on, but I think both of you would have to agree that there's a lot of tension in Wisconsin right now. People aren't talking to each other. People are yelling at each other. It's just not a very calm place. Is it incumbent on whoever comes out of the Democratic field and the governor to try and figure out a way that we can work together on some issues? Does it have to be so contentious? Christian?
I don't think you're going to see the two candidates be all that contentious. Perhaps they will, but from my side of the aisle, we've seen in the last year and a half, you've seen protesters hurling epithets at people. You've seen people marching on people's homes. You've seen beers dumped on legislators' heads, and so it's kind of hard to discuss that in kind of in a vacuum, as if both sides are doing it. It's hard for people that are Scott Walker supporters to kind of say, both sides are doing it equally. So I don't know. I think things will probably ramp up here in the next month. You'll hear a lot of hyperbole and a lot of angry words, but we just got a month to go, and then it'll all be over.
Ruth.
Well, I think, in the candidate debate on Friday, it was Kathleen Vinehout who had the best answer to that question, because all of the candidates talk about healing the state, and I think all of us are aware of how divisive Scott Walker has been. But she was really specific in her answer, and she talked about her role as governor would be not to fast-track legislation, not to violate open meetings laws. I mean, remember how outrageous it was to see them ramming through legislation in the middle of the night, deliberately excluding Democrats who wanted to vote, arm-twisting, making deals behind closed doors, going to the CEO of the GTAC mine and, you know, saying in a conference call that Sean Johnson reported basically that the governor was speaking for the CEO of the mine, that he had drafted the legislation, that he wasn't interested in a bipartisan compromise, just as if our governor were a spokesperson for, you know, this out-of-state mine owner. I mean, that kind of process stuff has been such a violation of Wisconsin's democratic traditions, and that's been very divisive and so disrespectful. I mean, watching Mike Ellis yell at Fred Risser to sit down and shut up. I mean, really ugly disrespect for just civility in government and a process that includes people. I think that's the starting point.
Let's give you a chance. Let's give you a chance, Christian, to respond to that before we go to our next call.
Well, I mean, obviously it goes both ways. I mean, you've seen everything that's happened in the last year. I mean, you had. The reason they had to vote on that bill was because the Democrats had fled the state to try to block it. And, of course, everything that they did to pass the bill was perfectly legal. It was perfectly noticed. You know, it was a frivolous lawsuit brought by Kathleen Falk and the Dane County District Attorney that was ultimately overturned by the state Supreme Court. So, you know, It's hard for people on the right to hear lectures about, you know, division and things like that when we've kind of gone through what we have in the last year and a half.
We're on the day before the recall primary talking with Christian Schneider, senior fellow at the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute. Ruth Conniff is political editor of the Progressive magazine. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And feel free to use that talk at WPR.org if you would like to, or you can go to our Facebook page, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show. We'd like to hear from you today. Karen in Oshkosh, hi.
Hi. I'd like to point out that while I understand that people are upset about collective bargaining, and as a person who is a public employee but never a union member and also a former school board member, I have some admiration for unions, and I also have some antipathy toward unions, public unions in particular. But I don't really think this was about unions. I think it's about the way Governor Walker did it. We've had some partisan fights in Wisconsin in the past, and can't say we're perfect in Wisconsin, but the way he did this was such a surprise and such a shock. I know that at least one of the public unions at the state level had already given up just about everything that was wanted, and yet we had to go through this awful, awful trauma because Governor Walker just rammed things down our throats. And there are many other things that people are unhappy with, too, has already been pointed out. The Badger Care, the senior care, and one of your guests said that the really, I find this hard to believe, almost all the school districts that I know of are saying, well, yeah, we have more flexibility, which we were negotiating with our unions anyway in terms of benefits, but that money that came from that so-called flexibility has not replaced the money that was cut at the state level.
Christian, the governor has said that he, in retrospect, wishes that he had prepared people more for the collective bargaining changes, hasn't he?
Yes, he. That is the one thing. I actually sat down and talked to him for an interview about this, and he said that he really should have probably spent a lot more time, you know, traveling the state, explaining to people that, you know, in school districts, they're forced to use the teachers' union's own health insurance company, which is costing tens of millions of extra dollars a year, and, you know, really kind of making the case for his reforms. And so I think he does feel bad about that. At the beginning of the day he introduced his bill, he called his whole staff together and said, you know, guys, I got to admit, it's going to be a tough week. And, of course, it's ended up being a pretty tough year and a half. So I think he kind of underestimated what was ahead of him.
Mm-hmm. Let's give this one to you, Ruth, Ken from De Pere asks, can we expect whoever governs will have to campaign for another year and a half instead of governing a divided government?
Well, I mean, that's always a concern in our increasingly campaign-oriented culture. But, I mean, I think at the state level it's not as bad as it is at the federal level. And certainly, you know, there is nobody in Wisconsin left who's not aware of what's going on. And so I think, you know, just getting out there and pressing the flesh is not going to be the main concern of the governor. I think it's going to be, you know, figuring out how to pull us out of the ditch that we're in, or it's going to be continuing on this same path.
Hugh in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I think we have a question tomorrow of whether we want democracy or mobocracy. I think, you know, if you want to get rid of a president or something or impeach them, you have they had to be guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors. Walker was elected in 2010. He surely, we have no indication of high crimes or misdemeanors, but you have a mob that obstructed, that fled the state, the legislators, Democrats that fled the state. You had a mob attacking legislators here. The crime is the judge who let the protester off for simply paying a dry cleaning fee.
All right. Does it need to be high crimes and misdemeanors, is Ruth?
Well, I mean, we've already gone over the history of the recall, and no, it doesn't. I mean, just very simply, it doesn't. That's our state law. You know, that's our tradition in Wisconsin. And, you know, I think especially in this case where you see these powerful interests seizing hold of our government from outside our state, it's a really good thing that there's some mechanism for the citizens of the state to respond.
Hugh referred to the people who are protesting as mobs, kind of a mob mentality. Do you see an element of that, Christian?
You know, I wouldn't call them mobs, but I would say it's a very, you know, it's a very interested special interest that's trying to recall Governor Walker. It's funny that, you know, Ruth keeps talking about, you know, all the corporate interests that are coming in and trying to run Wisconsin, when in fact, you know, it's the unions that have actually set this whole thing up and that are pouring money into Wisconsin. I mean, they just spent $5 million on Kathleen Falk running ads on her behalf, and you know, if I had to bet, she's probably going to lose tomorrow. So that's money wasted that's not going to be spent in the general election. But
those are unions inside the state as well, Christian. I mean, that's not ALEC. That's not boilerplate legislation that was written by corporate interests and Republican state legislators from around the country, which is what the union busting budget repair bill was and what a lot of the other legislation that we've seen coming through Wisconsin is.
Well, the recalls of the state senators last summer, I mean, they spent, you know, over $25 million to try to recall six state senators. You think all that money was coming from inside the state? Of course.
No, I don't. But I don't think that you can even begin to compare it. I mean, like, as we said earlier, it's a sixth of the money all the Democratic candidates put together compared to what Walker has. So to say that this is all driven, first of all, by, I mean, and you know that, I think you do know this because we both live in Madison. We both have seen that these protests are not a bunch of out-of-state union bosses bussing people in, as Walker has claimed. I mean, this is an indigenous movement. I mean, you may not like it, but it is. And the unions are a big part of it, absolutely. And there is going to be some national union support, some national Democratic Party support behind the election, but it'll never touch what Walker's got. And not only that, his whole governing agenda comes from outside the state. He's making his whole appeal to people outside the state. It's clear that this is not, you know, what's happening in Wisconsin and the damage that's being done here is not something that came out of some kind of citizen movement, said we want to, you know, disempower public employees so they can't even come to the table. We want to cut $1 billion out of our great public schools. This was not something that the voters called for.
Could both of you agree that it might be better for everybody if we didn't have all of this money coming in, no matter what side it is? Christian?
Absolutely. Ed Garvey has called for that. You know, the Tin Cup Brigade. He's asked candidates to eschew all corporate money, PAC money, union money, and really try to run just a grassroots campaign using those 30,000 volunteers who gathered the signatures, you know, just getting the word out in a grassroots way. And
Christian,
of course, the Democratic Party thinks that's unilateral disarmament.
But what do you think of that, Christian?
I don't necessarily really have all that kind of a problem, that much of a problem with money in politics. You know, I think the studies have shown that the races where the most money is spent, voters have the most, they're the most engaged, they have the most knowledge of the issues. So, you know, if the choices were between less money spent and more, you know, uninformed voters, I'd go the other way.
Just think of where all that money could go, though, right? Just think about what we could do with all that money. What could we do with it? We could do something, right? Don't you think? Let's go to Greg. No, let's pause for a moment first, and we'll return. We are speaking on this day before the recall primary with Christian Schneider, senior fellow at the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute, Ruth Conniff, political editor of the Progressive magazine. And we're looking at a number of issues, why a recall, what the issues are we have yet to talk about. I want to ask both of the guests this morning what kind of series of debates they would like to see from whoever emerges from the Democratic field tomorrow. And we, of course, assume that Governor Walker will be victorious in the Republican primary tomorrow. Should it be a lot of debates? What would you like to see in the next? It's going to be a very short period of time here, 5 weeks. So what would you like to see in terms of the candidates meeting each other? Our phone number is, our lines are filled right now, but eventually there will be an opening, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. You can also go to the you can go to the Facebook page, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And just for information, we want to let you know that if you have questions about voting, either, you know, if you're going to vote in tomorrow's primary, if you're going to vote in the recall on June 5, and you don't have the proper information about where to go to vote, you can go to WisconsinVote, that's altogether.org, if you need more information on your polling place. That's WisconsinVote.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, a middle school public school teacher in New York will be joining us. She wrote a very interesting piece in the New York Times on April 22nd, which you may want to look up. She teaches works of literature. Her students read classic works of literature, Lord of the Flies, Catcher in the Rye, Romeo and Juliet, Macbeth, etc. And she believes that testing, multiple choice testing, that is supposed to measure how well we grasp a piece of literature is really not measuring what touches our hearts and our souls. It's measuring how well you can decipher a somewhat complicated piece, but it might be not a very good piece of literature, and she's concerned about that, and she's feeling pressure to bring her scores up, and so as a result can't teach as much classic literature, and she laments that. She'll be with us the second hour of our program. Two more phone calls. Tomorrow is the recall primary election, and our guests are Christian Schneider, who is senior fellow at the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute. Ruth Conniff is also with us, political editor of the Progressive magazine, and we go next to Greg in Milwaukee. Hi, Greg.
Hi. The Wisconsin Constitution, Article 1, Declaration of Rights, Section 4, Right to Assemble and Petition, states the right of the people peaceably to assemble, to consult for the common good, and to petition the government or any department thereof shall never be abridged. The rights of public employee unions, peaceably assembled people, were abridged so that they may only consult and petition for cost of living increases, while Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, MMAC, et cetera, have their rights fully intact. That is sufficient reason for impeachment, but the co-partisans won't do that, so it's sufficient reason for recall.
Ruth, you want to start?
Sounds fair to me. I mean, you know, I think that's right. I mean, I think that an earlier caller mentioned that the public employee unions had already accepted all these wage and benefit concessions, so to not allow them to even have a voice to come to the table, it's not like they have all the power. You know, that's the whole bargaining process is exactly that. So it was an unnecessary thing. It was an infringement of rights, and it wasn't really about the money. So I think that that's absolutely true.
Christian.
Well, you know, collective bargaining isn't exactly a right. I mean, it was instituted in 1959, and you know, the idea that, you know, somehow Scott Walker is infringing on people's constitutional rights. I mean, there are 24 states where public employees have no collective bargaining, quote unquote, rights anyway. And, you know, in the federal government, Barack Obama's own federal government, they don't have collective bargaining rights, and nobody's saying that there's some kind of constitutional crisis there. In fact, before he even weighed in on the whole Wisconsin issue, where he said, you know, Scott Walker was assaulting state workers, he unilaterally imposed a wage freeze on federal employees, and he could do that because there is no collective bargaining rights within the federal government. So the idea that you know, workers' rights are being taken away, I think here is off base.
Well, but, you know, there is a federal court case on this, and I think what the caller is referring to is a union's right to certify. So that, do they have to vote, and do they have to count votes of non-members as well as members in order to recertify their union? It's a very high bar to even maintain an existing union. And in fact, what the federal judge decided was that in Wisconsin, because Walker gave preferential treatment to the unions who supported him, the police and fire unions, and didn't impose that high bar on them, that that was illegal and it couldn't go on.
Let me ask both of you, Christian, starting with you, what kind of debate schedule would you like to see in the next 5 weeks?
I would like to see, you know, at least one, if not two, debates coming up. I mean, I think a lot of the issues that you're going to hear debated in a debate are going to have nothing to do with collective bargaining. And I think the election, you know, if it's Tom Barrett that wins tomorrow, then it's going to look a whole lot like the election that we just had 2 years ago in 2010. So, you know, with a lot of the same issues. So, you know, I'd like to see them debate. I don't see any downside in that.
Ruth?
Yeah, I'd like to see Walker come back to Wisconsin, you know, leave behind the fundraisers he's been having in virtually every other state in the union, and talk to Wisconsinites about what he's doing and how he defends it, given that it's been such an abject failure by his own measure in terms of creating jobs. And I hope that they meet, you know, weekly, because it's such a short timeline until the election. You know, they may as well have four debates.
The governor has said, Governor Walker has said, described the electorate as 50-50. Is that a fair description, Christian?
Well, the polls that we've seen have shown that it's a dead heat right now, especially among, if it were to be Walker and Tom Barrett. I think he's probably got a little bit of a lead on Kathleen Faulk, but, you know, you never know. It all depends on turnout, who shows up on election day, and I really do think it's a toss-up at this point.
Ruth?
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's the latest Marquette poll showed Barrett and Walker even, just within a point, which is margin of error. And, you know, I think I totally agree with Christian. It's going to be all about voter turnout and people getting to the polls. And since voter ID and, you know, the voter suppression measures that the Republicans have tried to enact in our state are not in effect right now, it's going to be easier for students and people of color, other people, to come out and weigh in. So that's going to help.
Kathy in Oshkosh, hi.
Hi. I have never heard this discussed. I think this really verifies the recall. How many people who were not registered to vote signed a petition and therefore we could probably assume had never participated, and now we've drawn those people in?
Christian?
Well, you didn't have to be a registered voter to sign the petition. So there, you know, there, if I were Ruth's side, I would say, well, hey, there's a lot of people that have never participated before that are suddenly, you know, engaged. But on the other hand, you know, these may be a lot of people that supported the recall effort that may not show up to the polls because they, you know, it's just kind of not part of their routine. So, that's the case.
Talking about people being engaged, Craig Gilbert in the Journal Sentinel had an interesting piece yesterday, I believe, about how engaged people are. I was pretty amazed, Ruth, were you, to see how many people talk about this issue and have been actively involved in this. This is not a race where people don't know where they stand.
Yeah, and it's not, I mean, even if it is Barrett Walker again, it's not going to be a repeat of the last election because the political landscape is so different. I mean, the governor's race was kind of a sleepy race last time, and people were really focused on the fact that Feingold lost to Ron Johnson. And you know, it was a referendum on Obama. And this is a completely different landscape. I think we all feel in Wisconsin that Wisconsin is the most important political news and that national politics run a distant second.
Do you think it's a good sign that people are engaged politically, Christian? Is that good for us?
Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, if you look at the polls, there is nobody that's not paying attention to this right now. I mean, if you know, every election cycle you see some news organization go out and, you know, try to talk to independent voters or undecided voters.
Right. Where are they?
Yeah, they're going to be looking a long time this time because there just literally aren't any. So, I think it's good that people are engaged and people are talking about issues that matter.
Willem in Colfax, hi.
Hi. I really take exception to what Hugh said because I'm not a member of a union and I don't work for the state, but I was at the protests in Madison because I felt like what was happening had never happened before in our state. Someone that won a narrow election and then decided to ram through this whole agenda that I'm aware of is supported by big money from out of state. Like, people, there aren't too many union workers who can cough up $250,000 to give to a governor in a state that they don't even reside in. And I was spit upon by Tea Party people. So, the people that were down there, it was like the state fair. It was like a Packer game. It was the people of Wisconsin. And I think that's what's happening here, is that the decision is going to be that these people have hijacked the Republican Party, and now to the point where moderates are shunned.
All right, let's get a response. Christian?
Nobody's saying that people shouldn't show up and protest and do everything that they can to get their viewpoint across. I'm just saying that among of what happened, last year, there was a lot of aggression from people, a lot of anger from people who are down there protesting, and you've seen some criminal charges as a result. So. And a lot of it, granted, I was down there a lot, and a lot of it are a very small group of particularly aggressive protesters. But, nobody's saying that they shouldn't have been down there, that they shouldn't have, been talking about, whatever they wanted to talk about. So,
what about his charge that the Republican Party has been hijacked by conservatives?
Well, I mean... It's a charge that's often leveled, but I mean, you see here on the state level, you see, Jeff Plaley, who is a moderate Democrat, lose in a primary. You see all kinds of more liberal Democrats that are taking on moderates to try to cleanse the Democratic Party of people who may be conservative Democrat type of person. So, we are moving in a direction where moderates of either party aren't as common, but I think it happens on both sides.
Does it, Ruth?
I just don't think there's any comparison. I think when you look at the Democratic Party, it has in fact moved more to the center over the years. And when you look at what happened in Wisconsin, in particular to the Republican Party, it's so dramatic because we have our own Tommy Thompson, who has practically been run out on a rail when he used to be the leader of the party. And now, you have this sad spectacle of him running for Senate denouncing the very programs that he created, like Badger Care, or, it was really his idea to build the high-speed rail line that the Republicans and the Tea Partiers in particular decided to demonize, and Walker turned back all that federal money that was already allocated for it, costing us a lot of jobs. I mean, Tommy really believed in doing stuff for the state of Wisconsin. He's a huge Wisconsin partisan. He wanted to bring people together. He was proud of providing health care for kids, and now he has to pretend he's against all that stuff because there's no place for somebody like him in the party. That happened awfully fast.
Let's take the last question. We have about a minute, everybody, and let's try to adhere to that. Well, we have to adhere to that. Jeff in Madison, hi.
Yeah, when we had our first child, some wise person said you spend 9 months thinking about the day. Better start thinking about the 18 years after. Same thing applies here. We're all focused on a day, on an election. What the heck happens afterwards? I'd like to just guest comment on that.
All right, Christian, you got a few seconds to respond.
Well, that's the big question. I mean, both Kathleen Falk and Tom Barrett have said that they really won't say what they would do in order to fix the things that Scott Walker has done, and they wouldn't say how they would have done it in the first place. So, they criticize Walker for apparently not saying, running on this in 2010, but they themselves won't even say what they're going to do.
Ruth?
Well, I think both Barrett and Falk have said very specifically that they have two completely different plans for restoring collective bargaining. Falk would do it in the budget with a veto threat. Barrett would not. He'd introduce it as legislation, doesn't believe in that. And they would try to restore funding for our school system as a second priority. And, you know, really, I think Falk has a great answer on this. She closed the Las Vegas loophole again, because that amount of money that were given away to corporations that hide it in Las Vegas and other states with no corporate income tax is the same amount we cut out of our great vocational and technical college system. And putting that back is going to go a long way towards creating jobs and improving our economy.
Thank you both so much for being with us. We had an entirely civil hour, didn't we?
It's great to be with you, Kate.
Yeah, great to have you here. Thanks, Ruth and Christian.
Yeah, thanks.
Ruth Conniff, political editor of the Progressive Magazine, and Christian Schneider, senior fellow at the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute, our guest this hour. A couple reminders to you. We will be covering the recall primary at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. You can hear results and analysis. Our analysts will include Sean Johnson from Wisconsin Public Radio, Wisconsin Public Television's Frederica Freiberg, and political scientist Charles Franklin. So that's coming up tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. It's really very good coverage, and this is where you can find it, on the Ideas Network. Thanks to Brett Jaspers for producing this interesting hour, and thanks to Brett Jaspers for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We have another very interesting hour coming up. What about the great works of literature? Is anybody reading the great works of literature? Students in our guest class used to be doing that in her special class, but things are changing. We'll find out why. So that's all coming up. And the news will be here with you as well.